Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about a provocative new question surfacing around the Occupy Wall Street movement. Can you support the movement while at the same time profit from Wall Street?
Before the break, we heard Matt Taibbi's answer to that question. He said yes, with a caveat that major financial industry reforms need to come first.
Taibbi is, of course, the Rolling Stone magazine editor who famously wrote last year that Goldman Sachs is, quote, the world's most powerful investment bank, a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. End quote. And he still finds potential alignment between protesters occupying Wall Street and the street itself.
So, as we said, it's an idea people are starting to bat around a bit. Van Jones made the point today at the Occupy Boston encampment in Dewey Square. Jones is a fellow at the Center for American Progress and a former Green Jobs advisor to President Barack Obama. This morning, he asked Occupy Boston protesters the question, is this movement, the 99% against the 1% or the 99% for the 100%?
If this movement is mad at bankers because they're bankers, this movement can be stopped just like that. But if this movement is saying, no, if you're a banker, if you understand finances, we love you. We're not mad at you because you're a banker. We're mad at you when you're acting like a bankster. When you use that knowledge, when you use that power solely to enrich yourself, you're a bankster. But when you use that clout and that standing to figure out ways to get the economy moving again, to loan to small businesses, to loan to small farmers, to take the debt blanket off of the homeowners and off the students so people can start to be alive again, you're a banker. Now, we need some bankers. We don't need banksters.
So, we're going to talk about just that today with two Boston investors who say they support Occupy Wall Street. Listeners, do you buy it? Can you support the Occupy Wall Street movement, but at the same time profit from Wall Street? Is there room in the current model of American market capitalism to reduce the record income inequality the nation is experiencing? Or is the system we have set up now a zero-sum game? What would you change, and what is your question for our Boston investors? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, as always. We're at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now in the studio is Robert Zevin. He is chairman of Zevin Asset Management. The company is a pioneer in socially responsible investing and currently has some $300 million under management. Robert Zevin, welcome to you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Sitting right next to you is Amy Dominey. She is founder and CEO of Dominey Social Investments, another company that specializes in what they call socially responsible investment vehicles. Dominey Investments has more than $970 million under management. Amy Dominey, welcome to you.
Thank you.
The reason why I mentioned how much you both have under management at your respective companies is to sort of give a sense of scale, because it seems to me that socially responsible investing is still sort of a small part of Wall Street as a whole. I mean, I was just looking at, for example, Vanguard's S&P 500 index, and that's they have something like $52 billion under management. And Fidelity's, one of Fidelity's major funds also has in the tens of billions of dollar range. So you guys occupy a particular corner of Wall Street, but let's talk about it. I want to first begin by reading to you a quotation from some of the folks at Occupy Wall Street. They say, quote, "We are the 99% that will no longer tolerate the greed and corruption of the 1%. What we have in the United States is an oligarchy, and what we need is a people's democracy. So we're occupying this country. We will start at Wall Street and then spread out and occupy the country and take it back." Amy Dominey, let me start with you. Do you see Wall Street as an oligarchy running the United States?
Well, there's a fair amount of truth to that statement, and I think one of the purposes of responsible investing, and something that both Robert and I have stated for decades now, is to infiltrate and pervert Wall Street to do good. We are extremely concerned within our industry about the structure of finance itself, and we want to re-engineer finance to do more economically beneficial work in the world. So it is a conundrum, but gee, when you hear the end messages that are coming out of there, how could you not agree with the 99% kind of messages? I thought Van Jones's comments that you set up this were right on target. Are you, and this is the kind of thing that's turning off Wall Street, are you against the 1% or are you saying that there should be 100%? And I thought he was right on there.
Robert Zevin, do you see it as an oligarchy?
Well, it is an oligarchy, clearly. I mean, money calls the tune in politics. Money calls the tune in business regulation. So, yes, it's an oligarchy. But I think the idea of the 99% against the 1%, which includes almost all of Amy's and my clients, is not correct, because almost all of Amy's and my clients are in Occupy Wall Street, are working with Occupy Wall Street, have been demonstrating and making similar points themselves all of their lives. So it's clearly not the 99% against the 1%. It's more like the 99.9% against the tenth of a percent who are not a plutocracy, but a kleptocracy, really, and who have just been stealing and breaking the law.
Tell me a little bit more about the, if you can, what you mean by the clients that you both represent that are, quote-unquote, working with Occupy Wall Street.
Well, I mean, among my clients, there are people who are community organizers and who have been manning the press table at Occupy Wall Street in New York and so on.
Amy Dominy, you said something interesting about trying to work within Wall Street to subvert it. Tell me a little bit more about how socially responsible investing, how you see that accomplishing the subversion.
Well, let's look back at history. We now have a system where we every quarter care what the earnings of companies are. That came about because of laws passed during the 1930s to protect investors from the kind of lying that was going on in the 1920s. And in order to come up with those laws, lawmakers looked at informal practices that were better and codified them, made them into law. So now the Securities Act, Securities Exchange, has everybody focused on things that protect investors. Fast forward 80 years is the only thing management at companies look at. How are we going to increase our margins? How are we going to get better revenues? How are we going to report to investors? We are creating alternative full-cost accounting systems that drag back into the equation. How much of that money did you earn and expand, or how much did you steal by reducing your tax burden or steal by offloading environmental problems onto the public? This full-cost accounting needs to be integrated into corporate reports universally. It would not be happening were it not for us. There is now a large international movement, over 4,500 companies reporting these kinds of issues.
I want to ask you a little bit more about sort of the clout or the demands that you can make as mutual fund-based shareholders in some of the companies that are very prominent names on Wall Street. But I want to also just take a moment to sort of get at what I think is a basic tension that maybe a lot of listeners out there are thinking or feeling, and that is what we've raised in the introduction to this segment, that is, on the one hand, just the idea of socially responsible investing and what that means and what the actual companies are that may be invested in, and that how does that square with the idea of the profit motive. So, for example, I was looking at the annual report for Dominy Investments and just examining the social equity fund that you have. It's some $680 million at this point in time. And according to the annual report, 21% of the companies held in the fund are investment information technology, 17% in the financial industry, 11% in healthcare. The top three companies in which you own shares, or the fund, I should say, the social equity fund, the Dominy Social Equity Fund owns shares, are Apple, Microsoft, and JP Morgan Chase. So when you hear the word JP Morgan Chase, I mean, that's the thing that might raise a lot of eyebrows. How does that square with the idea of being socially responsible when so many people look to the financial industry itself and names like JP Morgan as the ones who have caused this crisis to begin with?
Yeah, and the answer is, one, J.P. Morgan Chase is the only U.S. money center bank that we do invest in. We have had to, in our fund, invest in Canadian banks due to the fact that the U.S. market was so little and we couldn't fill up an allocation in finance in that regard. And the banking system and that decision to move out of U.S. banks and into Canadian banks added 40 basis points of performance to the fund during the period. Now, should we have zero investment banks? We are on a knife's edge about that. There are plenty of industries where there isn't an explicit demand that you not invest in a certain company or industry, and yet you can't find one to buy. And we're on a knife's edge on the large investment center banks. But let's not mix up what we're messaging. We're not saying we're investing in socially responsible companies. We're saying we are serving socially responsible investors. We do that by buying better companies. J.P. Morgan, by most measures, is the least egregious of the large money center banks. And we are doing that by entering into shareholder dialogue with those companies. We are owners. We have the right to bring up issues. We use those rights in order to debate with management about policies that they undertake. So that's the promise that we make in our statement. We do not promise to find perfect companies. I draw the line at the halfway mark. I think JP Morgan, Microsoft fall above the halfway mark. I'd love to show you what I don't buy.
I'll talk about that in a minute. I also want to talk about shareholder activism because I know that's quite a big portion of what you do. But Robert Zevin, does any of what you've heard or maybe how you manage your own assets at Zevin Asset Management, do you give any credence to the criticism that it might be having your cake and eating it too?
Yes, but it's a question of what do you do if you don't eat your cake? Because, I mean, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that the capitalist system itself is the cause, the origin, at least creates a favorable environment for all these things to happen that we don't like. So a client comes to me and says, I don't want to invest in the capitalist system at all. And that's fine with me. But the answer is, then you don't have a bank account. You don't have a job. You don't pay your taxes. You're basically a hermit on a self-sufficient farm someplace. And I don't think most of us are willing to do that. The reality is, we live in a capitalist system. The question is, how can we make it better? How can we change it in a better direction? So and that's what social investing is really all about.
Talk to me a little bit more then about the idea of the shareholder activism that you try to bring to the companies in which you're invested. I was from the annual report, Amy Dominy, I saw that for at least more than a dozen companies, you brought shareholder proposals to the board and all of the shareholders on things like corporate political spending and sustainable forestry, internet freedom, things like that, which is laudable. But on the other hand, you also report that most of those companies, when it was put to all the shareholders to vote on, for example, Goldman Sachs, you brought a proposal regarding corporate political spending, only 14% voted yes. So it's a very steep hill for you to have to climb.
And that was one of the reasons we dropped Goldman Sachs from the portfolio. The shareholder activism is particularly helpful in defining a new issue. So political spending is something that we're just getting our hands around now. The company can give, they can give to a PAC, the leadership of the company can give. How do you wrap your arms around how much influence and payback companies? It's a wonderful place to define that, but it's not the end of the story. Then as a result of what happens from that, we learn how to decide which companies are better players and not to invest in at all, and which ones to satisfy. Now, the fact that 14%, I don't care at all about that. The roughly one-third of shareholder votes each year are settled, and they're settled because they got enough vote to come back next year. Mm-hmm. That's 5%. So that vote would have shown up year after year, been a thorn in the side of the company year after year, and that's a victory from my perspective.
Just being the thorn.
Just being the thorn.
Robert Zevin, tell me a little bit more about how Zevin Asset Management uses the power of being shareholders.
Well, I think all social investors do pretty much the same thing. The way that, first of all, if a company is in an industry that can only be changed by public policy, makes weapons or it makes, tobacco products, there's no point owning it because shareholders are never going to convince that company to go out of business. So we only own companies, as Amy said, which are better than average or much better than average and which are in industries which are not intrinsically unacceptable and evil. Then it seems to me we have an influence in at least two ways. We call up and ask questions. which is a very important way to have a dialogue and let the company know that we're concerned about something they're doing and we want to know more about it. And we file shareholder resolutions, which, as Amy pointed out, are sometimes brought to a vote and sometimes result in a negotiation with the company, which often agrees to do much or everything that's in the resolution rather than have it come to a vote. So in many different ways, we've had considerable effect on quite a few issues.
Well, we are speaking with Robert Zevin. He is chairman of Zevin Asset Management, and Amy Dominey. She is founder and CEO of Dominey Social Investments. They are two Boston investors who say they support Occupy Wall Street, but also believe in Wall Street's power for creating profits for their investors. If you have a question for them, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a couple calls. Sam is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Sam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show. I was listening and I realized that, you know, what your guests are talking about is old-fashioned investing, and that's not why people are occupying Wall Street. They're really, I think the bottom line is it's all the people that are speculating with the country's assets, and I think that the trust of the American people has been lost, and until heads roll, people go to jail, laws are changed, agencies are set up, it's a hopeless situation. I mean, I think it's great that your guests are, you know, involved in investing, but that's not the problem. The problem is so much bigger than that. And I'm waiting to see what's going to happen.
Sam, thank you so much for your call. Let's hear from Amy, who's calling from Sudbury. You're on the air, Amy.
Yes. I'm a small investor and also someone who believes in tax equity, and I find it unconscionable that my capital gains rate is barely more than half the rate that we pay on wages. And I wonder what your guests think about changing the capital gains rate so that it equals whatever your wage rate is in the progressive tax system.
Amy, thank you so much for your call. Robert Zevin and Amy Dominey, there we have what I think is sort of the big picture analysis, that it's not just the street itself, but it's all of the regulatory and tax implications that have flowed back and forth between Wall Street and Washington. I mean, what would you say for the idea of much more robust regulation or aggressive changes in the tax structure that would raise capital gains tax rates back to, say, what they were in the 70s or 80s?
Absolutely. It's essential. And I think Occupy Wall Street is almost deliberately misinterpreted sometimes, maybe because it's so vague. But it seems to me clear that they're calling for tax equity and they're calling for increased regulation, as Sam suggested. And it's
you feel that way, but do your investors feel that way? Would they also support an increase in their capital gains rate?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Amy and I certainly would personally.
No, and I've had clients who have gone public on supporting higher taxes for the wealthy.
And what about this idea that, when we keep saying 99% and 1%, I mean, let's put some numbers to the top 1% of earners in America are. I mean, I was finding data today based on 2009 numbers that the total wealth for the top 1% on average per person in that 1% is $14 million. But for the bottom 20% of America, the average total net worth is actually a negative number when you take into account their debt they owe, minus $13,800.
Right.
Is there anything that you see in the current system that we have? Because I know some people are asking for some very extreme resolutions, but is it a zero-sum game, first of all, or can we close that gap?
Oh, I think the gap can be closed by tax policies, by government employment policies, by minimum wage policies, by strengthening the rights of labor unions, by changing the mix of government spending in a direction that uses more the skills that already exist in the labor force.
What about using your the ethos of shareholder activism to demand different packages for top executives in companies?
Which is a policy that's well underway. Many of us do file those resolutions, but it is a far broader issue. I mean, this capital gains tax and the break is also there for dividend income is outrageous. Why should trust fund hippie pay half the taxes of somebody who's working
and
for
yet,
a living.
Do you ever feel that you're sort of a voice crying in the wilderness because overall it seems like attitudes are quite attitudes amongst people who, say, benefit from that lower capital gains rate are, why should it be raised?
Yeah, this is one of the great things about Occupy Wall Street is that it has brought so many of us who felt that we were voices in the wilderness to the recognition that actually the majority of Americans have noticed this and cared about this. I've written on the need to throw out modern portfolio theory. It failed during 2007-2008, both on a system-wide level and a portfolio level. Replace it with something that gears every reward toward economic benefit to humankind, so that if it's a product that has low economic benefit to humankind, tax it. I don't care what you do to slow it down, make it illegal.
Wouldn't that capture a huge fraction of the transactions that happen on Wall Street, since they're transactions between firms that may add no value to humankind?
Yeah, but if you say there's $45 trillion in global GDP and roughly $680 trillion in known derivative settlements in a given year, we've got way too many transactions going on. It's a completely lopsided situation. So, yeah, it would slow it down and it would be a good thing.
We are speaking with Amy Dominy. She is founder and CEO of Dominy Social Investments, and Robert Zevin, chairman of Zevin Asset Management. If you've got a question for them, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And again, we're talking about this issue of, can you support Occupy Wall Street and at the same time be a member of Wall Street itself, be an investor? Richard is calling from Natick. You're on the air, Richard.
Hello. Thank you for doing such a good job being two bankers. And I was wondering if last week you had heard about the Bloomberg report that said Bank of America and J.P. Morgan had moved $154 trillion in their gambling bets, derivatives, to FDIC backing, that's us, with no regulation or oversight. Why is this not on regular TV or the press, and does the bank need more regulations, or we need better news organizations? What's going on there?
Richard, thank you for your call. I mean, I think Richard brings up the point that maybe greater oversight, greater transparency, maybe even more aggressive reporting from the media. Robert Zevin?
Well, I think there are two dimensions. The first is that, you know, we've had almost 45 consecutive years of deregulation in the United States. We had a pretty good system in place after the Great Depression. And people learned the lessons that they're now learning again, but then they forgot them. And we didn't have any financial crises, as Matt Tabibi mentioned on an earlier program. You know, 1,500 people were charged with crimes, and 800 of them went to jail after the little tiny savings and loan crisis in 1991. We need that kind of regulation and enforcement again, and we need to have newspapers that aren't all owned by the banks and the oligarchies, which is increasingly the case, unfortunately.
Amy Dominy, how much has the socially responsible investment community grown over the past decade?
Well, there's been a tremendous growth. Unfortunately, from my perspective, it's very much driven overseas, so that you've had very large growth in South America, in Asia and Europe, and the United States is now where it kind of sprang from thinkers like Robert here in the United States. It has now been taken over much more with overseas, and we're beginning to have to dance to the tunes of overseas regulators. So, for example, in the European Union, the kinds of reporting that are being demanded of their publicly traded companies are the kinds of reporting that we're seeking to get demands for out of our regulators. Just to throw some numbers there, over 40 SRI mutual funds in the United Kingdom, over 30 in Korea, over 15 in South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's a widespread movement.
The reason why I ask is because I wonder, what do both of you think are the primary impediments that you've seen here to your style of investing, and for the impediments to its growth?
Well, there's been a big lie out there that you can't make money that way. There is an index. It's run by Miskey. I was involved in the creation of it. It's called the Miskey KLD 400 Index. If you find that and compare it to the Standard & Poor's, the benchmark, actually this form of investing has done better. And it has done better by a statistically significant number. So that big lie has been out there, and it's just wrong. The other big lie that's been out there is it's my fiduciary obligation to invest in absolutely everything I can invest in. That is kind of a spin-off from modern portfolio theory. Again, that is just another big misinterpretation that satisfies the Wall Streeters who spout it.
Well, you keep saying modern portfolio theory, which it didn't come out of nowhere, right? It actually emerged from, you know,
academia
and decades of putting into practice in Wall Street and benefiting people who found benefit from it. I mean, Robert Zevin, what's your response to what impediments you see for your style of investing?
I think it's partly definitely all the things that Amy mentioned, and in addition, I think most of us are, as one of the callers suggested, not really doing all the things that Wall Street does, and that's basically because we try to be socially responsible to our clients as well, and we try to avoid risk and make careful, conservative, safer investments with a longer time horizon.
Do you see?
And the truth is, a lot of people don't think that way and don't respond well to that. They want to know, how much money did you make this week?
There's so much emphasis in the now. In the last couple seconds we have, do you see any, even a slight bit of growth in terms of the internal desire on Wall Street for maybe policing itself, for policing their own?
No.
You know, I would have said yes. So there you go.
We're gonna leave it on that bit of disagreement, I'm afraid. It's provocative enough. Robert Zevin, Chairman of Zevin Asset Management, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
And Amy Dominey, Founder and CEO of Dominey Social Investments, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, I know you have things that you want to say about this topic, so drop us a line at radioboston.org. Up next, the BSO welcomes its first female brass player. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.